Yeah, you're listening to the first installment of Karma Culture After Hours.
Nice.
Where we extend the show above and beyond the constraints of the hour.
The hour.
The hour.
The hour.
The hour.
All right, listen.
Chris, you and I, we've got now free form.
Yeah, we really do. Now, this is not on live radio like we normally are. This is a little bit afterwards. We realize that we have a little bit more things to say, so we're going to extend it on to the after party kind of thing. Now,
the after party.
So we're going to talk a little bit about continuity in comics, but first we do have a sponsor.
Yes, this week, the first week of the Comic Culture After Hours is actually brought to you by Marvel and DC, working together to bring you the best in After Hours comic book programming.
Nice, right. I like that.
I think we should celebrate with some sort of ceremony. Yeah,
nice. Cool. All right, listen.
All right, listen, Chris. We ran out of time. I don't know what you know. What problem is? Problem is you end up rambling.
I end up rambling.
Yeah,
I do.
And then we lose track of time. Young Andrew Roebuck here has to give that signal.
Yeah, that time. Time out. Time out. Yeah.
Time out, whatever. Like, hey, guys, you're running out of time. And then, you know, the stuff I want to talk about the show, we never get to.
Nobody
it.
Cares about the stuff that you want to
talk
about.
Yeah, apparently
Walt.
So.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Chris, you rambled about 52 and
hey,
now.
Why don't you shut the.
Today.
Oh, wait, I can't. Sorry, I can't say right. Oh, wait, yes, sir, I can.
No, you can.
Oh.
Hey, listen.
Walt won't have that.
No. We do want to talk about.
But we're not on live radio anymore. I can say whatever I want.
Hey.
Now.
We do want to talk about comic book continuity.
Okay, listen. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Now, you are a veteran, a warrior of comic books. You've read them since the 70s. You read them in the 80s. You read them in the 90s.
Yes, yes.
You read them in the O's.
And the O's, yes.
You read them in the 1s.
And read them in the 10s.
10s.
Yeah,
the ones
absolutely.
Or 10s?
I don't know.
Now, continuity. I want to talk about continuity.
Okay.
And the importance of continuity. You and I touched on it a bit earlier in a sense that, you know, like Marvel and DC wiping the slate clean.
Yep.
Now, how important is continuity to the characters?
You know what? That's a great question. And I'm going to sum it up by saying I don't know. And the thing is, and I'm being very serious here. For a guy like me, continuity is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
However, comic books are an organic product.
Organic.
Well, they
that
are.
Means they cost more.
Well, and when I say organic, they're constantly growing and changing. You know, there's new writers, there's new artists, there's new blood. It's constantly evolving as an industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. When comics come out, like something that I like isn't going to be the same thing that somebody else likes.
You've touched on something very important here that I'm gonna jump in while I have the thought
okay.
in my head. It's almost generational. So mm-hmm. what happens is you take a creative team, you take a writer and an artist that defines a character at a time. Now, by luck, by circumstance, you are 23 or whatever the heck you are.
18.
And you're 18 and whatever. You're into that, okay?
Yep.
That defines your relationship with that character.
Absolutely,
okay?
Yeah. Yep.
And that goes on, let's say, for a decade.
Okay.
Okay? And then other guys come in afterwards and stuff like that. But then because our beloved characters last pretty – they're eternal, really – you know, as long as there's going to be pop culture going forward, there's going to be Batman, there's going to be Spider-Man.
Right.
So we're now faced, it's almost a new dilemma.
Yeah, for sure.
We're now faced with the thing of changing generations,
yep.
a new voice, a new direction.
Yep, that's right.
That's going to offend that last generation.
Absolutely. So how do you appease
right.
both generations?
Right. How do you have continuity without... making it difficult for the new people
right,
to access
because,
it.
And yeah, absolutely. And I think Marvel, and I mean, I know you and I talked earlier about on the regular show about this, and I think Marvel has keyed in on this because as a collector, You know, it was very difficult for me, you know, seeing Action Comics up in the 600s or the 500s collecting comics. And you would say, okay, well, I want to get Superman comics. So I want to get Action. But it's up to 500 already. So, I don't want to go – I can't possibly go back and collect all those previous issues.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you may reluctantly start buying them and try to figure out what the story is, and then eventually you kind of do and you get along with it. But it's very daunting, and you have to really have a leap of faith in order to start buying those books. Whereas, you know, with continuity, with Marvel, they continually have number ones, which initially frustrates the bejesus out of me.
Right.
Because the nerd collector says, it's not a number one, it's just a gimmick, you know. But you know what? It is a jumping on point for new collectors.
Right.
However.
New readers maybe.
And new readers. Right. Now with DC, they have actually revamped and it's called retcon, retro... designed continuity of the past characters. So now they've rechanged things. So you know what? They're not the way they were before. So it's hard as an old timey collector to go back and say, I'm going to read the new Batman, because it's not the Batman I know.
Right.
It's completely different.
Right. Yeah. It's almost detached. Like new readers of the Batman. Like say you're going on eBay and you're bidding on a 9.2 CGC graded copy of Batman 232, the first appearance of Ra's al Ghul, whatever the heck, and you're paying $200 for it.
Right.
Whatever. I don't know. In no way are you assuming that you're getting something that's related to the Batman Inc. that you're reading right now.
No, that's right.
But you're still buying into the premise of Batman and being an old collectible character.
And here's the other thing that I don't like is how do... Now that DC has a new 52,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's the new Batman. There's going to be the new Joker, the new Harlequin, the new Ra's al Ghul, the new Batgirl, the new Mr. Freeze, the new Solomon Grundy. You know, you name it, it's going to be new. Are they now new origins, and are those books going to be worth anything as collectibles?
Yeah.
Because they're not new, but they are new, and it's going to be difficult for someone to deviate from the old first appearances.
You're absolutely right. Listen, on comicbookdaily.com, a new writer, Tom Barry, had a great post on continuity.
Right.
And the paragraph, the line that caught me when he said it, it was who can connect with a Spider-Man, a Wolverine, or a Hulk that is one kind of personality in one book and a totally different kind of personality in another? So above and beyond what you and I are saying, we can expand upon that and say, hey, yeah, we have this character and we're changing him from before.
Yeah.
Which is a thing altogether that a fan has to deal with.
Right.
But even now, within that context of the new one, we have three or four different writers with the same time
absolutely.
Trying to put their imprint on the character.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how much... here's the golden question. How much should DC or Marvel control the creative license of writers?
Right.
And how important is it to keep the core characteristics?
I understand. What you're saying.
You know, going.
The same.
Yeah. You know, you can write Batman your way. You can write Batman your way. You can write Batman your way. But these are the parameters you have to write Batman under.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and you're right, because you know what. And sometimes people like to push the boundaries, and I think – I don't know if it's changed in this day and age, but it seems like people now want to make known their imprint, right? Whereas – okay,
perhaps at the expense of the character.
Right. Now, Neil Adams completely redefined Batman in the 70s, right?
Yes.
You know, because up until then he was like that – you know, people always think about, well, Batman, you know, in the 1960s, the TV show with Burt Ward and Adam West.
Yeah.
You know, they think, well, that was so campy. But that was what the comic was like.
Right.
You know, Neil Adams took that comic and redesigned it so that it was kind of like this cool, old-timey Batman.
Dark Batman.
It was the Dark Knight again.
Yeah.
And then somewhere he kind of lost his way again. It became a little bit fluffy, I'll call it. You know, a little bit not so dark anymore. And then Frank Miller comes around and does the Dark Knight. And now all of a sudden, it's dark again. And it's kind of stayed that way since then.
Yeah.
But people seem to want want to have, well, this is my Batman. This is my imprint. This is my take on it. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not, because I think people should still work within the confines of the character.
Yeah.
However, having said that, you know, it worked great for Neil Adams and Frank Miller. And certainly when they decided, well, even in the art styles, not necessarily in the writing or the design of the character, their overall characteristics, in the art styles, you know, there was a time when all the artists were forced to draw Spider-Man's webs the way Todd McFarlane drew it, because that was sort of a new way of designing it.
Right, right.
Right? So, you know, before it was just sort of, you know, a bunch of lines and cross hatches, and that was a web. Mm-hmm. Then Todd McFarlane said, oh, you know what? What if somebody actually saw a web coming straight at them? What would it look like?
Right.
Right? So he designed a web to be this big glob with spider webs all over.
Strings all over
the place, and things flying all over. You know, because he just said, hey, I want to see what this would look like if it was coming directly at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that sense, there are certain ways you can redefine a character without redesigning the character.
Yes. And that's the key, I think. That's the key to our discussion here is I honestly think it's important to stay true. Listen, those characters were initially successful for a reason.
Absolutely.
And yeah, you can argue that society and times change, and there are some characters, you and I have discussed this before, that cannot make what I call the generational jump.
Right.
Right? So, right. You know, a character like Scooby-Doo has made the generational
Absolutely,
jump.
Absolutely,
you and I
yeah.
have discussed this.
Yeah.
Characters like Flintstones have not made the generational
jump. Yeah, that's a great, great point. You know, Flintstones really hasn't. Scooby-Doo has.
Yeah.
In the comic world, I think a lot of the Golden Age characters have not made the jump.
Spectre didn't make the jump. Some of them make one generation, but they don't make two or three. Like Batman has made four generational jumps successfully.
Yep.
Spider-Man has made three successfully.
But even Wonder Woman, it's like they keep on pushing her.
Yeah,
even
but
though
she not necessarily successfully made the jump.
Right.
And neither perhaps is Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're
like, so they're tinkering with them to see what the new generation will like. So it's a difficult topic.
And you know what's interesting about that is, so talking about generational gaps, jumps, whatever you want to call it, Captain America has been around from the 30s, 40s,
sorry, 40s.
You know, many generations did not really care for Captain America. Marvel always published it. You know, in the 80s was not a popular character at all.
70s either, really. Late 70s.
Late 70s, early 80s, into the 90s.
Yeah.
It's kind of crappy character, you know, and now all of a sudden he's popular again because of the movie, because of Ed Brubaker becoming a great writer on the character.
What? Chris, there is a great example. You've hit the nail on the horn there, and you've you haven't made a couple successful generational jumps. You haven't, like Captain America hasn't.
Yeah, no.
But the character, there was still something there in the embers. There was still something there that could have been resurrected, and the you know Captain America may be one of those rare instances where you know the first generation enjoyed him, the second and the third. Forgot about him.
Not so much,
perhaps. And then he was resurrected in the fourth and brought to life again for everybody to enjoy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, let's not give up hope for Fantastic Four.
Oh,
let's
for sure.
Let's not give up hope for...
You know, let's not forget, you know, Fantastic Four, you know, was great at the beginning of the Kirby years, but really kind of faded out until John Byrne came around with Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And then that faded out again for a while. And, geez, I can't even think of a popular team that's been on the book other than Jonathan Hickman of recent fame who has really done anything decent on Fantastic Four. You know, I'm sure
not
that,
even the movies helped resurrect the
Fantastic Four. I'm gonna date myself here, a character like Wolverine seems to be popular no matter what is being done with the character. No matter how many crappy titles happens to come out, the character seems to survive the generations.
Yeah.
Because the character's been around since the 70s.
74.
You know, and since almost day one, you know, in all new, all different X-Men, Uncanny X-Men in 94, You know, we've got Wolverine going and popular character then eventually he got his own title. Frank Miller did a miniseries back in the 80s, you know, like constantly, you know, being popular. Now he's obviously a huge character. And yet there's other long time titles that can't seem to get that popularity that Wolverine got.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, like, you and I have argued this for a few minutes, and I think we've come to the conclusion that there is no, there's no set formula.
There's no rhyme or reason.
There's no rhyme or reason. Really, there isn't. There, you know, you and I want the protection of the continuity.
Yeah.
Because you and I are traditionalists.
You know what? And this is something that I believe it or not, I've always said. Any character is only an Alan Moore book away from becoming popular.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a Frank Miller book.
Really? Because. Yeah. All you need is Alan Moore to work on something, or Frank Miller, or whoever it happens to be, you know, some popular writer, great, phenomenal writer who sees insight into a character that nobody else has seen,
right, yeah.
And it becomes a smash success.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you take friggin', you know, I don't know, Clairvoyant
from
the 1950s. All of a sudden, Frank Miller or Alan Moore decides to write that comic. Yeah, and now those comics people become priceless.
So I'm gonna email Alan Moore the whole library of lethargic lab.
Yeah, right.
And see what he can do with that. First of all, I think Greg is great.
He's great. Greg is great. Yeah. Greg, you know what? Greg came and did a guest speaker with my class the other week.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, he talked about his life in comics and talked about producing Lego, and they're not producing, but, you know, designing
drawing
Legos
Lego,
to drawing
yeah,
Lego
designing.
and doing storyboard artists for Lego cartoons and things like that. Yeah, he's a great guest speaker.
All right, Chris. Hey, listen, that's about all I can handle today.
I think I'm done. I think I'm done for continuity anyways. You know what? Thank you so much for signing into Comic Culture After Hours.
Comic Culture After Hours. Only available at comicbookdaily.com.
That's right.
Yeah.
And have yourself a great night.
Yeah.
Because you should be listening to this at night because it's after hours.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Good night.